This is an oral history interview in the Civilian Conservation Corps project sponsored by the Arkansas Endowment for the Humanities. The date is August 5th, 1982. The place is 1409 North Pine, North Little Rock. The interviewer is Joanne Duval. What is your name, sir?
King Seabird.
Would you tell me a little bit about yourself, such as when you were born, the date you were born, where you were born, something about your parents and your brothers and sisters?
I'm the oldest son of Reverend and Miss C.A. Bird, Paris, Arkansas, my birthplace. I was born October 11, 1912. And at the age of 9, I moved away from Paris to Conway County, Arkansas, Springfield. And, of course, my father was being a minister. I went away to school in the year of 1936, and we were just an ordinary poor farm family. And after finishing high school at what is now University of Arkansas Pine Bluff, the high school division of that institution, I enrolled. Colonel Snyder, the superintendent of Camp 4734 Forest City, came to Pine Bluff and interviewed 10 men. Two LEMs came from Philander Smith College, Little Rock. 10 of the LEMs, which is local experienced men, came from Pine Bluff. And after Colonel Snyder interviewed some of the fellows who would be available to go, who wanted a job for the summer. And that was my way of entering the CCC.
Okay. Did you tell me where you were born?
Paris, Arkansas.
Paris. And then you moved away to Conway.
Moved away to Conway County, Springfield,
okay.
Arkansas.
And could you tell me something about your brothers and sisters?
I have six of us, two boys and four girls. One brother who lives now at Menifee, Arkansas, who's postal service. He's a postmaster at Menifee. One sister lives in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the oldest of the family, oldest of the group. And the third sister, next to me, lives here in Little Rock, where I am, and the other two are deceased.
What were their names?
The one deceased?
All of them.
Ruth Morris. Now, she's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Florence Criswell. Marjorie Pruitt.
Pruitt?
Pruitt.
P-R-E-W-I-T-T.
Pruitt. And Evelyn Pearson.
And your brother?
And the brother, Harding Bird. He's the one at Menifee, postmaster. And I am King Seabird.
Okay. How old were you when you entered the CCC?
I must have been about 24. I often used to tell the kids in school how old I was when I finished high school. They couldn't believe it.
And how did you learn about the CCC?
Well, Colonel Snyder came there and told us about it. We had read about it, but we didn't know particularly anything, had no experience about it, didn't know what it was like. And when he came there looking for locally experienced men, because the average enrollee had very, very little training, and he wanted some men of college category who could kind of serve as leaders. That's why they called locally experienced men, LEMs.
Could you boil down your reasons, or your main reasons for enlisting in the CCC?
A need for a job and some money. Although it might have been very small, but that was the main purpose. We needed employment that summer after getting out of school in some manner. And we were glad to get some experience, which it was an experience to us too. get out there and have the experience of building the first house in my life on the camp. That was one of the first questions the superintendent asked, could I build a house? And reluctantly I said yes. I never built a house, but I knew I could because we had experience and had the training in college and school. So that was the main purpose, need of finance.
Okay. Could you tell me something about your family's financial situation? How bad was it?
Well, that's something that's almost embarrassing. The first year I came back from school, our farm life out there it was during the Depression. No crops were made, and I had struggled through my first year of school away from home. And I never shall forget, on returning home, my father told me when I arrived, said, you should have stayed there because there's nothing here to do, which was very, very disgusting. And I don't know, we didn't have anything, just had an ordinary little country home out there in the hills, and it wasn't very productive.
Your father was mainly a farmer?
Yeah, farmer and minister.
And what crops did he grow?
Cotton, corn, potatoes, just general. My mother always tried to have a nice big garden, which was one of the main sources of a lot of our food seed. And with just average country farm family, that we were very poor, and we needed the CCC as bad as maybe worse than the CCC needed us.
I forgot, when you were telling me about your brothers and sisters, where were you? Were some of them older than you? Had they already gone to work?
I am the third child. There was Ruth, Florence, and me, then Marjorie, Harding, and Evelyn. The younger sister deceased.
Well, had they already married, or had they gone to work to help support the family?
My oldest sister, the two older sisters had married, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, when and where did you enlist in the CCC?
Forest City, Arkansas.
Okay, well, I think we already got that one, too.
Camp 4734.
4734. That was the camp
number.
That
was the camp number.
They all had?
Every camp had a number in different localities of the state. But I was with 4734.
Okay, and you were stationed there in Forest City?
I was stationed there in Forest City.
When did you leave the CCC? And how long did you serve?
I served from 1936 to 1941, something better than 4 years. But only one of those years was the locally experienced position. After that locally experienced position terminated, we re-enrolled as regular enrollees for about a month, and we were finally promoted to assistants and camp assistants and assistant leaders, which meant our salary was about $45 a month. We originally, when we were LEMs, our salary was $70 a month, and of course at that time that was a nice salary, we thought, which it was, just coming out of school and
$70,
and of course that only lasts for 1 year, and after that, they didn't discharge anybody. Everybody had a good record, but they finally had to discontinue the LEM due to some government regulation, the money shortage, I don't know what it was. And we stayed there then, and they enrolled us as leaders and assistant leaders on a less, of course, they furnished out, everybody's got his clothes, food, and shelter, you know, lodging and that type of thing.
Okay, would you tell me a little bit about how was the LEM different from your later duties when you were an assistant leader?
They were very much the same. The local experienced men, when they came there, even that year, they served as leaders and assistant leaders out in the field because they had more experience in work, knowledge of farm, construction, and education-wise and all. So our duties remained somewhat the same. It was just a difference in money because that LEM had terminated.
So it was like the difference between $70 and $45
a
month.
Okay. However, it averaged out about the same because we were getting our clothing and food with that. Before that, we were not getting our How was that? Now, I'm not sure about the what it was, the difference. Anyway, we're getting our clothing and food and all. Oh, I know. We were able to live out in the city when we were at EMS. Mm-hmm. And that is the time I married. I married while I was in the CCC.
And what is your wife's name?
Golden. She was Golden Kane at the time until she psyched me into marriage.
And what year was that?
That was 1936, November the 7th, wasn't it, honey? November 7th, 1936.
Okay. What were all the different kinds of training that you received while you were in the CCC?
In the CCC camp?
Mm-hmm.
I would say one of the most important trainings or experiences I received were learning how to get along with all kinds of people. That was one of the most effective or most important factors I think that the CCC had to offer in my case, because we had young men from all walks of life, and you had to be very flexible and know how to get along with people, which I think that helped me a great deal when I began to teach, because I had the same, somewhat the same thing, only it wasn't quite as crude and rough, because we had just the very roughest part of society, it seemed like, to deal with. But in the school system, of course, I think that helped me a great deal in getting along with people and learning the different categories of people that you have to face in life.
You had skills such as carpentry.
Yes, sir. I took the course in when I first went away to school, I took vocational agriculture for the first 2 years, and I decided I'd prefer to have building construction. They called it T&I at that time, trade and industrial education, and I changed over from vocational agriculture to trade and industrial education. And that had to do with their building construction shop.
Now that's while you were still in college.
Yes, and still in college. And that was why that the superintendent selected me and another friend of mine, very close friend of mine, Horace Barnett. We were the two who were elected as carpenters. Now there were others who were elected for other reasons. I don't know, they had had vocational experience or what they had. But I remember Mr. Barnett and I had, we were special, the ones for carpentry, and that's where they stuck us right into the carpentry division and put us to work in construction time we got there.
What did you do in the camp when you weren't working, when you had off time?
Well, they had a recreation hall that, I never was much on shooting pool and that type of thing, but they had a recreation center that the boys would meet, and we also had a camp quartet that we would sing. They had a big boxing platform out there where they'd box, and they'd have movies. And, well, they had a baseball club. I played baseball there for a while.
What teams did you play?
Forest City, Wynn, just the local places around there. Forest City, Wynn, Helena, and... most of the time, it would be a local team, not necessarily a CCC camp, because the CCC camp, we had towns closer to us than the next camp. I don't recall what the nearest camp was to us, but we had one or two CCC camps then that we played a time or two, but it was mostly local places like Wynn, Helena, and Palestine, the little town around it, any little town that had a little ball club. Mm.
Okay. Well, let's see this question. Did your camp have any educational opportunities other than job training?
Most of the educational opportunities had to do with job training. I mean, it was it usually had something to do with what the boys were doing in camp. Like this farm management here that Mr. Keller, I believe, taught there. He was, forget his name. Anyway, the farm management and, of course, the carpentry work. I was instructor in carpentry. I took this course, but after that I assisted the camp education advisor, Mr. Harvey McDaniel. and I took charge of the camp carpenter class myself. And of course, the office work there, all these areas of instruction had to do with something we were working in, like office work. That helped me a lot in my cost clerk work, clerical work. And of course, the carpentry, I'd already majored in that in school, and I soon turned that loose as an enrollee and went to teaching it. And of course, the farm management had to do because if you will note that most of the camp, not most of the camp, some of the camps were for forestry, some were soil conservation, and the various areas of conservation. And since our camp was mostly agriculture, it had to do with all of our cooperators were mostly agriculture people. And that was the reason why we had this farm management, because it's all in the farming category.
I think what that question was getting at was, I believe some of the camps had opportunities for some of the men if they hadn't finished high school, and I think some of them, even if they were near colleges, could take courses for credit. Did you have?
Well, see, we had all finished high school anyway, and we were entering college. In fact, some of the enrollees or some of the LEM were already college. College.
Everyone at the Forest City Camp had
finished high school and going into college.
Hmm.
I mean, all LEMs were all of the 12 who came in with me. Now, we had other fellows that who were teaching had practically no training, maybe. But the group that I was enrolled with, the LEMs, we were all either high school or college mature.
Hmm. Okay. We covered that question. Just kind of give me an idea of what the camp life was like and what a typical day was like. From the, you know, you start out with the time you got up in the morning until you went to bed at night.
In the morning, I can't recall what the hour was then, being some 40 years ago. But there's the bugler would always sound off with his horn early in the morning to rise. And usually the sergeant would make his round to come around to see that everybody was up and on the go, that nobody was still curled up sleeping. At least after that bugle, everybody was supposed to be awake and making an effort to get dressed and get out. But it was always a mad rush to the, what they call the latrine, to wash up and get back. And you had a little period in between there to do that. And the next call then would be for breakfast. And of course everybody would line up and get into the mess hall for breakfast. After breakfast, of course, now between that time, after breakfast, you'd go back to the barrack, make up your bunk, very tidy, had to be very exact about it, and get your bunks fixed and get ready to go to work. Well, the third call was to go to work. The enrollees, by that time, the truck drivers had the truck lined up. And the fellows who went to the office, which most of my work was in the office, we'd always have to go to the office and see that everything was straight there. And of course, after that third call, the fellows, the camp foreman, would load the men up on the trucks in various sections. Every fellow would have his orders from the superintendent where he was going that day. Maybe one man would be going up in Wind area and another up somewhere in Crawley Ridge and another down towards Helena. Well, this particular camp covered three counties. Cross County, which was Forest City, trying to think of what the other counties were. Cross County, it wasn't Phillips, was Helen and Phillips County?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, it was Cross County, Phillips County, and St. Francis County, that's where we were. Anyway, we covered the three counties. Each one of those foremen would have a certain area he was going to cover. And of course, if that particular cooperator had enough work, probably to take two or three truckloads of two foremen in their groups. Maybe two foremen that work on the same farm sometimes. And as a cost clerk, that was my duty to see that all the reports were made daily. Of the cost of what the government was out of to do these things for various cooperating farm agents. And That would be my job. Each day, these foremen would go out and come in. They would bring in several sheets, maybe pasture clearing, sodding, so many square yards, and so many men, enrollees. And they would have something like pasture clearing, tree planting, and just a number of various things that they would do. And maybe one foreman would bring in five or six different sheets, and so many man hours on there. And I would have to compile that cost and show what the job consisted of, what it was costing the government to get it done. And at the end of the month then, I had a long report about 36 inches long, what they call a CC7, had to send in to the headquarters. And I was very fortunate, I feel very fortunate to say that out of my 4 years there, I don't think I had very many red marks on my report. It came in very accurate all the time, which was, I was very proud of that because some of the other clerks there were getting a pretty rough time on that. There's another clerk there who had in charge of the transportation, which was a different report to my work report. And we were always trying to see, kind of rival, see who could make the perfect report, and I always one out on that most of the time. So during the day, my daily routine was in the office, filing reports, making up costs, and so on. And in the afternoon, when the fellows would come in, we would never, I was trying to recall how we, when the fellows came in, I'm getting back to this fluid thing now. We were up all night then, up and down, but I was thinking as the fellows would come in doing the daily routine, we would sometime have to go out and assist the gas pump, you know, fellows who gassed the trucks up for the next day. Mm-hmm. Every fellow, when he came in, he had to gas his truck up, so we wouldn't have to do that the next morning. And of course, they'd have to wash the trucks, they'd be dusty and dirty, they'd have to wash the trucks and gas them up and get them ready for the next day, so they'd have nothing to do with load and get out. So we would have to see to the... We had a special fella who was a gas man. He didn't do anything but pump gas. But we had to keep the cost and all that and get the mileage off the trucks and that type of thing. And that was our busy time during the afternoon. And of course, after that was all over, it would be supper time. We'd go in and some of the fellas shoot pool. And in the summer, while the evening was long, they'd sing, had quartet singing. And every once in a while, they'd have a church group to come out, and there are ministers come out and lecture and preach to the group. So it was something to do all the time. It wasn't ever a dull moment.
Okay, now I believe you told me over the phone that you taught carpentry. That was when you went in as the LEM when you were teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
After you became the assistant leader.
Yeah.
Then you did the cost.
Right.
Clerk, okay. What was the food like? Do you remember what food was like?
The food was very good. Well, really, the food was. I could think the food was better than it was at home before. I mean, a lot of the boys, mm-hmm. I think, had. Well, food was excellent, I would say. We had very good cooks. Our mess sergeant, Anthony Elliott, who's now he's a minister in Rome, New York. He was here last summer before last to visit us, and he was our mess sergeant. Paul McCrary, who's here in Little Rock, he was one of the head cooks. And I can't think of this little short fellow's name, but he was two fellows there who were really the head cooks, and they did a wonderful job. And the food was very nice.
Did you grow some of your own food around the camp there? You have gardens?
No, the government usually furnished all the food there. Wasn't any food growth involved.
So they just shipped the food in?
Yeah, they shipped the food in here from Little Rock or wherever. Transport trucks would come in and back into the mess hall and bring produce and everything there. But all the everything constructed was out on the farm with these cooperatives. And of course, that had nothing to do with the camp. You know, they would bring anything into the camp.
How did you feel about being away from home? Were you homesick?
Well, after I got married, I was. But at first, I'd been away from home in school for 3 or 4 years anyway, and I had got accustomed to being away from home, so it wasn't a lonely life at all until I was married, and then I'd come home every chance I could get a leave. I'd run home, see my wife, and find that we moved to Forest City. That's where my first two children were born, in Forest City.
Where was Mrs. King living when you first were married?
She lived at Springfield, at my home, until we moved to Forest City.
And how far was that?
From Springfield, about 100 miles from here, Forest City, about 150 miles. Because it's about 50 miles out in Conway County. It's about 150 miles.
How often did you get to see her?
Oh.
Before she moved?
Maybe once a month. We'd get leave once a month. If finance provided, if our, you know, money was right, we'd maybe, they would give us LEMs. You know, we could go home every weekend if we could afford it. But at that salary, we couldn't afford to send our wives or something, because several fellas, Mr. Edgett and two or three other fellas, were married at the time. Or did get married. Mr. Edgett was married already. He's a mess sergeant. But Mr. Barnett got married in the camp. And Mr. Gray, I believe, got married, a Forest City girl. Several of the fellows got married while they were there, including myself.
Did you write a lot of letters home to your wife and to your family?
We wrote quite frequent, yes, because at that time, telephone calling, that was out of the question. Mm-hmm. And in fact, out in the rural, had no telephone out of my home anyway. Mm-hmm. So we wrote very frequent.
Would you say a letter a week, or...?
I would say, yeah, something like a letter a week at least, yeah.
Did you keep any of those?
I don't believe I have any of those letters. Honey, do you have any? After we moved to Forest City, I guess we destroyed all the letters we were together. So.
How did your family feel about you being in the CCC and your wife after you got married?
Well, I think my father soon wanted me to see my wife was living in his home. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a home of our own and such. And I think that he was pretty anxious for me to get a place in Forest City where my family, we could be together, which was better for us. It was better that we'd be together. And they didn't ever say it, but I think that they were, you know, kind of happy to see us get together and get a home and a place to live in Forest City, which after about a year we did.
Okay, but so when she came and then you got a home in Forest City, you didn't live on in the camp anymore?
No, I began to live out in the city.
Okay, so
we would walk that about 3 miles every day to the camp.
Oh, my goodness. Good exercise.
My wife would also, I'm sure you want to know this in the program, that she used to take in laundry. A friend of mine, Sam Hamilton, and I were both married, living out in the city. He was an LEM. He was a leader. He wasn't an LEM. And he was allowed to live out in the city. And his wife worked at a laundry. And she used to take clothing from the enrollees. We'd take a bag of clothes, maybe a dirty clothes, 50 pounds, and wag them 3 miles with them. Mm-hmm. And we would keep note of that. And on payday, our wives would wash those clothes, launder those clothes. And on payday, we'd go up and down the line with our list and collect for the month. And it did very good. We only thing of just rugged getting them to and from, because we'd carry the clothes in a great big GI bag when they were dirty. But after they were laundered, we would have to put them in a box and carry them like a suitcase, and that wasn't very nice going 2.5 or 3 miles in the morning. But that was one of our means of surviving and having additional funds other than $945 a month.
So, the government took out some and sent home to your wife?
No, the LEMs, they got all of their money. Now, the regular enrollees had introduction like that, but we never were really regular enrollees until, well, after I married. I wasn't an LEM, but since we were married, they would give us all of our money. They didn't, in fact, they could have sent it to her just as easy, but since she was there.
But since you lived at home with them, you just
they just paid me off when I'd bring my money home, such as it was.
Can you tell me something about the living experience, what use it was to you later? I think you touched on that before when you talked about getting along with people.
Yes, as I said, that was the important factor in it, I would say, but I guess there were other things that, your question there, restate that again. I'm trying to bring in some other point.
I wanted to know a little bit about your living experience there and how it helped you later.
Well, it made me realize how a person can get ahead if he sacrificed, and that the person who was willing to work would always, there was always a way to make it. I mean, there wasn't any such thing as giving up and saying I can't, because a lot of times things there, that amount of money per month, with a wife, and before I left, they had two kids, and I was still making $45 a month. It made me learn how to balance a budget on a very meager sum of money.
What were your children named?
King Seabird Jr., my oldest son, born in Forest City, and Barbara Jean Bird, oldest daughter. They are both living here in North Little Rock now, unfortunately.
Did you have more children later?
Yes, I had three others.
And what were their names?
Harold Arthur Bird. He's with State Farm Insurance. He's superintendent of State Farm's claim superintendent in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Linda Ruth Bird. She is with the Southwestern Bell Telephone Company in St. Louis. And Beverly K. Bird. A little round is with the Hennishot Insulation Company here in Little Rock. She's been there some several years. So that's all five of them.
What were you doing during World War II?
During World War II, I had just got my discharge from the camp, and I went into construction work in Forest City with a private contractor, Mr. L.C. Cox. And I worked with him about a year. Bought my first automobile, a 1936 Ford Coupe. And that is the car we moved to Little Rock in. My wife and two kids up back of the seat, with a great big truck ahead of us coming to our new home in Little Rock. I guess that was about the most adventurous thing we had, because in that particular moving event, my wife told me, said, well, I don't intend to move but one more time. And we were moving right around the corner there to my brother-in-law at a rent house. And the only other time we moved was here. Mm-hmm. So I followed suit on what she asked there, move one more time.
Were you ever in the military?
No, I was never in the military. When I left Forest City, I came here and worked in Jacksonville.
You came to Little Rock.
North Little Rock. And I worked at Jacksonville Ordnance Plant for several months during the war. And I worked at Pine Bluff Hospital several months. And I worked at Jerome, Arkansas, down at the Japanese camp. Now, those are the places I worked in order to make enough money to buy this home at that time.
Now, what was the last one?
Jerome. Arkansas. That was a Japanese camp way down towards Dermot, back in there somewhere.
Did you just move down there? Or
no, we just commuted here. My brother-in-law and I drove a truck back and forth. We'd go down there and stay in board room and board during the week, come home on weekends, that type of thing.
How far?
Oh, that was, I guess, 140-150 miles down there. That was about the father's place. Now, Jacksonville, of course, was close, and we worked at Camp Robinson some, too. In other words, all these were defense, government defense jobs during the war. And I was in class 1A three times. Almost got into service. And each time I was exempted because of I had started teaching then.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't recall the director of vocational education then, but he went to Washington and got us deferred. And I was deferred three times, but I was right on A1 three different times thinking I was enough to go to service. But each time he went to Washington and maneuvered somewhere and got some special men in the teaching field of vocational education deferred. And I was teaching at that time at Jones High School.
Jones High School.
Yeah, that was my first teaching.
That's here north of Rock?
North of Rock, yeah. Sipioy Jones High School. Taught there 27 years.
Do you remember what year that you started?
I started in 1942, 43. It was really 43 when I started. It was 42 mm-hmm. and 43 school year, because I started in February of 43, really. But the reason I said 42, it was 42 and 43 school year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there until 1970. And during all that 27 years, I had taught with no degree. I didn't have a college degree, but I was going to school at the same time, continuing to get my degree. And then when I was transferred to Ridge Road Junior High, which is predominantly white school up there, I taught my last 6 years up there. And just fortunately, I had my degree just in time when they transferred me. I'd have felt very chagrined not going up there without a degree into a new institution and all that. But I was fortunate in getting my degree. And of course, at that time, two or three of my children already had degrees. So we all graduated together.
Now, where is Ridge Road?
Ridge Road is 4700, it's Ridge Road Street up there, 4700 Ridge Road.
It's here in North of Rock.
North of Rock. Ridge Road Junior High School.
When you went into the CCC out of college, how much college had you completed?
None.
You just started?
I just finished high school and went into CCC and married and father of two children and bought this home.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I started teaching, I had just bought this home and moved here when the principal came to me and asked, someone recommended that I could take a person's position that had been drafted into the service.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I would take it for a few months and complete that year. Not thinking I'd ever go back, because I was in construction work then with my brother-in-law here in town. And we'd worked around different defense jobs, and I thought that, well, I'll just finish it since it's cold, I'll take an inside job. And I got there working at $75 a month. And finished that year, and they offered me about a $15 raise. I got $90 the next year. The next year they raised $120. And I just kept on till later on they started the veterans program. And I was teaching night and day. And teaching night and day and trying to go to school and educate my kids is what I was up against.
What were you teaching mainly? Vocational?
Vocational, shop work. I was a trade teacher. Building construction. Carpentry, building construction. I taught that for 33 years.
Okay, we just stopped for a few minutes here to check the time, and because the telephone rang. I was just getting ready to ask Mr. Bird what his opinion of the CCC and its contribution to the youth and the nation's economy in those years from 1933 to 42.
Well, I think the CCC was a great contribution to our society, because at that time people were down to nothing as far as surviving money-wise, and it was really the only hope for a lot of families. And I think today, I don't know how the Depression or it's going to serve us, but if we had something like the CCC now, instead of handing out government checks to people sitting down, we'd be a lot better off. Let the people work some. Instead of handing out free money, I think would be a lot better. But now Our trouble now, I think, if the CCC was in existence, you'd have a lot of people sitting back because they done spoiled them, handing them something for nothing. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe you'd have the working type of people now that you had then, because those guys went out there and really didn't mind getting dirty and went to work. Mm-hmm. But now I think our government has spoiled the people now, and I don't believe it'd be a kind of a hard thing for the CCC to operate as it did then. We realize that the finance would naturally be more. We wouldn't expect the government to just pay $30 as it did back in those days when enrollee services. But even if they paid $100, I doubt whether you'd have the participation you had back in the 40s, 30s and 40s. But all in all, I think it was a great thing. It was a lifesaver to a lot of people. I'm by far, far from rich, but I can say that it gave me a start, and it made me realize how to manage, and it was just a nice thing for people.
Okay, I understand that Congress has recently passed a bill to reinstitute the CCC. This kind of relates to what you just got through saying, but do you think maybe that would be a good thing?
It would be. If they can get, they'd have to be very strict, I think, about some type of pressure to force people to work. That is the only thing I see would be a handicap. Other than that, it would be a nice thing. I don't know whether there would be enough people who would really be willing to work now like they were then. But if they should get this into effect, I think it would be a great thing.
Okay, I've asked you a lot of questions about what went on in the CCC and what your part was. Is there anything that you'd like to just kind of throw in on your own that was important to you?
Well, yes, there's Mr. Ratliff has asked me several times about this flood in 1937.
Mm-hmm.
That was about the most horrible thing I could say we experienced during the time, because that was the time that the flood had taken St. Francis River out of its banks, and a lot of the cooperative farms were flooded, losing cattle. We experienced seeing houses floating down St. Francis River, cows, bellowing. I recall one lady on a housetop out in the river floating down, hollering, screaming for help. That was tragic. I mean, that was tough. And we would stay up all night serving Army trucks. That wasn't the regular CCC trucks that we hauled in out on the field with. But the Army trucks came in, and by that being a government project, we supported, serviced them for gas and oil, whatever they needed. And those guys were driving night and day, 24 hours around the clock. And of course, sometimes with freezing weather, we would have to go something like a half a block from our barracks to the gas pumps. And as fast as we'd get back to our barracks and cover up and get warm in those Army blankets, the trucks drive up to reload. And it just kept us going all night in that weather, sometimes with freezing weather, jumping up and down, going back. We couldn't afford to stand out there and wait on them, but it looked like every time we'd get bedded down, those lights would flash, and I went to another truck, and we'd have to jump up and run and see those trucks. Plus, keeping up with the expense of, the gas, that we issued. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a terrible time then. Of course, I had this incident I'll tell you about. I went out with the superintendent one day out in the area where we could look and see what this flood was really doing to the people. And that was when I had the chance to see that their livestock floating down the river, bellowing cows, lowering, and I spoke to this lady on top of the house, and it was really tragic. That was the most heartbreaking, effective thing that I experienced in the CCC. It was really made our hearts go out to try to help the people.
How long did the flood go on? Just several days, or?
Yes, it was around a week or 10 days. And this happened, it was in the freezing part, but it was cold and bad weather. It wasn't in the springtime, so summer, And it was really tough, not only on the people out there, tough on us to try to keep up with what was happening out there, the service and the truck people. They had to have this fuel in order to keep going. And they used a big army truck to transfer people to food, to have different food shelters and living shelters as well. Different churches and organizations taking in people. And of course, these army trucks are transferring food from different localities to help the people. So it really kept us on the ball there, trying to keep those trucks rolling.
After the flood was over, did the camp do anything to further help the community? Was that the end of it? Or?
Now that I'm not sure, because I'm sure some of the work that the boys did out in the field was a result of that flood, maybe mm-hmm. some of the things they had to do. But mm-hmm. not having been one of the persons who went out in the field, I was cost clerk there in the office. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of some of the clearing and building and things that they did because I wasn't out there. But I'm sure some of the farm work and improvement that they did increased in some areas because of that flood. Naturally, it did some damage, I'm sure.
Okay, I'm going to burn out of tape.